You're listening to Screen Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Screen Heroes podcast. I am your host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely regular time co-hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
Hi, and Ray.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back, guys. This week, we are talking WandaVision episode 8, previously on. But before we dive into that and all of its spoiler territory, we're going to talk news, the latest in entertainment news. But at the top of the hour, we're actually going to talk a bit about our news. So we've got some changes over on Screen Heroes. We now have complete control over the public page on Facebook. So now you can actually find the Screen Heroes podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/screenheroespod. It's the same handle that we have on Twitter. And now we have an Instagram with the same handle. So you can find us at the same place everywhere. You can go to screen-heroes.com for all of our links to everything everywhere. And we have a new home with Dorico Studios. So Dorico Studios is now replacing the Heroes Podcast Network to kind of expand our reach a bit. We do more than podcasting now. So you can check out all of our cool stuff at doricostudios.com. If you used to stream the show, that is where you're going to be doing it, doricostudios.com. Otherwise, your feeds should not really change a whole lot. So there you go. There you have it. Don't forget, you can join us live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern now on the Screen Heroes podcast Facebook page, and you can chat with us during the show. Okay, Ray, news. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, so let's talk about Avatar.
What about it?
Okay, so
we're talking the James Cameron Avatar, right?
Ah, God. Okay. Ray has exited the podcast. So Nickelodeon has given Brian Konietzko and Michael Dante DiMartino full control of an Avatar studio. They want to build an Avatar cinematic universe, and this is one of the few properties I believe can actually handle that. They're going to go back in time and forward in time and across the entire fictional globe. Their first production is a theatrical picture that's gonna start production the end of this year. So I'm so excited. This is what I've wanted for years. I've always said, like, checking out the world, what else is going on, you know, with other benders or, you know, previous avatars going forward in time when they get to modern tech. It's just going to be a lot of fun. So I'm super thrilled about it, and they can have all my money.
All of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ryan, anything you
need to eat?
Anything you'd like to add, Ryan? I know you've got some strong feelings about the Avatar franchise.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more recent addition. I'm not as optimistic as Rachel is about it, unfortunately. I thought The Legend of Korra kind of lost me. It wasn't nearly as good as The Last Airbender, but, you know, I hope that it's worthy to be a successor and not another one of the films, you know, like the one Avatar, the Last Airbender film that we got.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I would think, since it's the original creators and it's with Nickelodeon, it's probably in pretty good hands. Mm. It may be impossible to recapture the magic of the original show. You know, sometimes you just have a perfect combination of people involved, and that's difficult to recreate. But I definitely think it'll be better than the live action film that we got. I'm not really worried about that, but yeah, somewhere in the middle on the upper side, I would imagine, is where we'll be. But it's pretty big. You know, Nickelodeon giving that much control to creators is interesting. It's very unique, and I look forward to seeing what they do. I'll be curious to see what it looks like, if they'll keep the 2D animation style, or if they'll go towards what Nickelodeon is doing more frequently, which is the three-dimensional CGI animation.
Yeah, should be interesting. I think that mm-hmm. would suit that any of those kind of series really well. So. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. What else we got, Ray?
Oh, so the Golden Globes happened last night. And if you don't know, it didn't do too well. Nobody really turned in. And I'm going to blame the pandemic, because with everything going on, it's very difficult to give a shit about celebrities.
Yep.
Like, I'm just going to say, I do not care what these people are wearing at their home on their Zoom calls and everything. I don't care. I did see quite a few of the pictures that were nominated in TV shows, so I'm happy to see who've won, but I just can't imagine that they were worth it. Like, good try, guys, but this could have been done in a 20-minute online announcement video, or, you know, maybe an article. We're all kind of over fanfare at this moment.
I didn't even know it was happening until the day of. I had totally, like, it slipped my mind completely this year that it was even like a thing that was still going on. And I found out about it while watching SNL Sunday morning on Hulu, because ours has commercials.
They did a couple of cool things. They had Amy Poehler host in LA and Tina Fey host in New York, and they had the audience filled with first responders. So no celebrity was actually invited to the event that wasn't like doing some sort of presentation. So they really did try to keep the social distancing and as safe as possible.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Big things. Judas and the Black Messiah won Best Picture. Chadwick Boseman won for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Soul was it won for original score and best animated film. Chloe Zhao, who is directing The Eternals, won best director. She is the first Asian American woman to do so. So really cool night. Andra Day was the first Black woman to win best actress in 35 years.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. Borat won for best comedy.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay.
Pretty yeah.
Pickens, I guess, if that won for best comedy based on what I saw.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, clearly, like, not a ton of movies were released in 2020 compared to a normal year, but that's still interesting. I didn't see Borat 2, but I guess it was funny.
I just heard it was really poignant. I didn't. Yeah. Nobody has said, hey, this is funny. Everybody's told me, wow, that hit way too close to home.
Well, maybe that's why it won then. You know? Yeah. I don't know.
Right.
Hard to say since I didn't see it.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, and I did see it, so.
Fair enough. That's fair. That's a good point. What else we got?
All right. So what else did I set aside? Give me a second.
Well, I'm just going to throw one out there. Ryan, did you have a chance to see Marvel's MODOK trailer?
I did not.
You did not. Ray and I saw that. So MODOK is a new Marvel series coming to Disney Plus this year. In fact, very soon, all 10 episodes drop on Friday, March 21st on Hulu, which is like, you know, 2 days after Falcon and the Winter Soldier premieres. So, you know, kind of a tight release. I'm a little surprised they didn't push that a little bit.
Snyder cut too, huh?
And the Snyder cut's just, you know, a few days before that. So it's a really big weekend in March all of a sudden between all of this content. But, and it's followed up swiftly by Godzilla versus Kong. So now the second half of March is like the most exciting time that we've had in a while for new content. It is a stop motion.
Is it show. MCU content?
So this, I mean, I believe so. I believe it's MCU content. It's a little gray, mainly because it is, like I said, stop motion. It's on Hulu, and it's like a bunch of characters that were not overly familiar with in the MCU. But Patton Oswalt is voicing MODOK, which is exciting. Melissa Fumero is in it. Ben Schwartz is in it. Beck Bennett and John Daly are both in it. So it's got a pretty good voice cast. And it looks like, I like stop motion, so I think it looks really cool. Just stylistically speaking, I know next to nothing about the character because I just don't. And so I'll be curious to see what they do with it. Ray, what are your thoughts?
So MODOK is a very formidable villain. He is in charge of AIM in the comics, and he is basically a floating Krang.
I mean, Krang kind of does float anyway, so that's when he's not in the body.
That's true. That's true.
He has like a little hobby bird chair thing.
After
After watching the trailer, I am 100% convinced this is the way to do the character. He should be treated with sarcasm and a grain of salt, and I absolutely love it. So I am happy with the treatment that it's getting. I don't know if you could have done him seriously.
It seems to be very self-aware and tongue in cheek, you know, which is good, I think, for something like this. It's very weird. Like, it's straight up, it's going to be a really weird thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it and seeing if it ever ties in to anything else. Like, will we see a stop motion version of Nick Fury, you know, Samuel L. Jackson voicing him and everything? Certainly possible. I don't, you know, MCU is definitely stepping outside of their comfort zone and taking on more ambitious, stranger things these days. You know, and with the success of WandaVision, now I feel like nothing is really off the table at this point.
Right.
Sticking with Marvel stuff, there's a big leak for Shang-Chi already because of Lego.
Toys are ruining everything.
Yeah. Featuring a villain from Marvel Comics. That
I didn't
everybody
see
wants to see large reptilian villain.
I didn't see that. So, I just saw the costume.
Yeah, apparently I missed the was it a Lego leak on the costume too?
It was a toy leak. I thought it was Lego, but maybe I'm thinking of something
else. I guess I didn't see that one, but I did see the Lego leak featuring that villain.
There was a giant merch leak on Godzilla versus Kong too.
Yep. Yeah, which spoiled some of that stuff as well.
With all this stuff getting delayed, the whole merchandising thing is really messed up. Yeah. It's hard to stop those wheels rolling. You can delay the movie, but delaying the merchandise is very difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah. These people have contracts and they stick to them.
And it takes the factory a long time to produce stuff. So, you know, you have to start way ahead.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as the factory is producing stuff, guess what? People are going to take pictures of it.
Yeah. It's only a matter of time, and then, you know, stuff gets shipped around to different distribution centers and even more people get their hands on it. So
I'll say the new Ghostbusters movie has had barely any leaks as far as merchandising, which is very unusual. There's been one ghost that you can kind of see in the trailer that has been spoiled because of leaks. But other than that, it's been nothing, which is very surprising to me.
It's interesting. It makes me question if maybe the merchandise is just more standard Ghostbusters stuff.
It very well could be that
equipment,
yeah.
And the Ecto, you know, that kind of thing, which wouldn't ruin any plot lines.
Yeah, it's not really a spoiler, you know?
So that's an advantage for them because they don't have to worry about this kind of thing, since that movie's been delayed quite a bit at this point, versus, you know, I guess Godzilla versus Kong has been delayed almost the same amount.
Yeah.
at this stage. So yeah, gotta watch out for those toy spoilers. It's a weird world that we live in now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, switching over to DC news, I say we talk about the news that broke about a Superman movie. So J.J. Abrams, Bad Robot, his production company, will be producing a new Superman movie. And we don't really know a whole lot about it yet. No one has been cast. Everyone's calling it a reboot, which I think is a fair assumption to make, but I don't know that that's been necessarily confirmed outright by Warner Brothers and WB. And there's been, you know, some talk that they're going to bring in a black Superman, which there have been versions of in the comic books over the years, which would be very interesting. And I was curious if you guys had any thoughts or preferences, or if there's something that you'd like to see that, you know, either would or would not include Cavill, if there's any thoughts that you have.
So I feel like Marvel and DC are so fucking polar opposites. It's amazing. Like, Marvel is, hey guys, we just graduated with our masters and we have a 10-year plan and a 401k and a nest egg. And DC is like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing tomorrow.
DC is more like, I just shit in my hand. I'm going to throw it at that wall and whatever sticks, that's what I'm going to do.
I think that's harsh. I think that's a little harsh.
I'm excited. I like that they're playing around with the different worlds, the different universes. And like, for God's sakes, give this to John Boyega. We need another British guy playing Superman.
Well, I think it would be cool to see them adapt like a Val Zod storyline kind of thing. And with them doing so, the Flash movie is supposedly going to be their version of Flashpoint. Not like the comics, but that type of event. And with that, you know, the multiverse is already starting to get tied together with Crisis on Infinite Earths on the CW. And we had, you know, Ezra Miller's Flash crossover. So we know all of these things are in the DC multiverse. So you could have a Val Zod Superman very, very easily that you could tie him in. You could have him be from a different reality. You could have the realities overwrite themselves and have him be the Superman that always has been Superman, in our, you know, whatever the prime timeline is that we have. Right. There's a lot of flexibility from that standpoint. There's also some other things that they could do. You know, the word Superman sometimes comes off a little vague to people because there's a lot of similar characters that have used the S. For example, Steel. Steel is the guy in the big metal suit that has the giant sledgehammer, and he can fly, and he's a black man. And so they could definitely go that route. He's a very cool character. Shaq kind of played that character in a movie in the 90s.
That character was a Superman. I mean,
right. That's what I'm saying.
He used the S because he was a Superman. Right. So,
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so it could be something like that. They could go that route and do another Steel movie. You know, so they have some options.
I say that, you know, you guys are pretty quick to dismiss my shit at the wall thing, but like, fans have been telling DC it may be mean, but they're making stupid decisions. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a black Superman. I would love to see that. However, fans have been campaigning for Henry Cavill to get another Man of Steel movie and get a better chance at playing the character that we want to see since the original Man of Steel came out, since BVS. And you know, there was rumors, oh, Matthew Vaughn is going to direct the next Man of Steel movie. You know, so-and-so is going to direct the next Man of Steel movie. And everybody's like, yes, let's do that, please. And then they're like, no, nope, we're just going to get rid of Henry Cavill and go this completely opposite direction because we had a bunch of controversy with a black actor. And so now we want to show everybody we're cool by having a black actor play Superman.
That, like, is kind of how it feels, to be completely honest. But I'm more bothered by J.J. Abrams.
But he's just producing it, though, isn't he? He's not directing it.
Correct. He is
at this point. Yeah, they don't have a director attached to the project.
They don't? So, or is he just do they have a writer attached?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They have a writer attached. I apologize. And I'm sorry. I am not sure how to pronounce his name. Ta-Nehisi Coates is the writer who is signed on to do the film. Again, I apologize if I got that wrong. But so they do have a writer attached. I misunderstood. I thought he was directing it. I suppose they could have Abrams direct it. As someone who has watched Abrams handle both Star Trek and Star Wars now, two franchises that I love quite a bit, I would like him not to direct a Superman movie.
Sure. All of us have seen the movies that he's done, and a lot of us have not liked the movies that he's done, the franchises that he's hurt. But it just says he's producing it. If he was going to direct it, I feel like they would have announced it, unless it's like a last minute thing where whoever they want to do it backs out. His production company is also producing the Constantine series or movie or whatever that ends up being. You know, there's been a lot of things that he owns a production company, so he's going to be involved in productions. It does not mean he's directing everything. So
I'm totally right. In chat, I just want to thank Daryl here. It's Coates. Last name is just Coates. I mispronounced that. So thank you for that. But yeah, so I mean, I think it's interesting that they announced this news now ahead of the Snyder Cut. I think that that was probably a smart move, because post Snyder Cut, you have the situation where people either loved or hated it. And then that people would then would say that this was based off of that reaction. So they get kind of ahead of that.
Except now they're saying it's based off the Ray Fisher drama, which, you know, it does feel like it is, like Rachel and I mentioned. So I mean, you get it either way. There's no win.
It does come off like the Warner Brother execs are like, prove that we don't hate black people.
And but also, I mean, if Snyder Cut does well, then everybody's going to be like, well, I really now I still want to see a Henry Cavill Superman because he was great in this, too. And so
well, you can have both. I mean, that's I think something
right, but that they haven't announced both. They announced one.
You're right. Well, I honestly, truly think that at this point, any of the characters other than Wonder Woman and Aquaman, who have already have their own really established franchises, all of those other versions of the characters are on hold until we know how well the Snyder Cut is received. Because they're not going to just can all of it if it ends up being beloved. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to move forward with a bunch of it if everybody hates it, right? Like, that's something.
So they've only announced the Snyder Cut in like the last year, and Man of Steel came out many, many years ago. So if they were going to make a Superman a sequel to that movie, then they probably would have announced it well before the Snyder Cut was even a thing.
I don't know why that has been on hold for so long. It's very weird. I know that Snyder wanted to have Supergirl introduced in Man of Steel 2, and the studio told him no. Now she's going to be showing up in The Flash, which is interesting. So they're still doing it, but they're not doing it in a Superman movie, which seems like that would be more natural. I don't know. DC has not handled their cinematic universe well to date. Not everything has been horrible, but overall the management of it has been very frustrating from a fan's perspective.
Well, even a blind squirrel finds a nut occasionally. So yeah, it's bound to have a lucky one every few generations of movies. But
well, the key is behind all the good ones is, you know, there's not a lot of pressure to connect them to other things.
Exactly.
And they find directors who are super passionate about the individual project. You know, James Wan, Patty Jenkins, they were like super pumped for the whole thing.
David Sandberg, mm-hmm. You know, Shazam. He's one of the funniest people to follow on Twitter as far as movie-related people. So. Well,
and speaking of Shazam, supposedly both Shazam and Black Adam start production in April.
And also there's a rumor that now Hot Girl is going to show up in Shazam 2 and not Black Adam. So that's interesting.
Well, there's also rumors that Black Adam will show up in Shazam 2 since they're filming in the same area.
And there's rumors that Black Adam is going to explore Dr. Fate's origins, which is interesting.
Oh, man. I love Dr. Fate. That's such a cool idea. I'm a big
there's just so many rumors about those movies, it's hard to keep track of what, you know, what's real and what's just speculation at this point.
That's true. That is absolutely a fair assessment. All right, so I think we've kind of gone down the DC rabbit hole. Is there anything else news related you guys want to touch on before we switch over to WandaVision?
Nope.
I do want to say that in chat they said that DCEU is basically a shit sandwich, and so I have at least one person on my side with my shit analogy, so thank you.
No, you know what, look, I appreciate the opinion, I do, but it bothers me that it just validates Ryan. That's really what bothers me about it.
That's why you left a sad reaction to it? Because
no, I left a sad reaction because I love DC. Look, you guys know I'm a huge MCU fan. I love the MCU, and I do. But DC was my home superhero group, right? Those are my guys, and you know, Green Lantern's my favorite superhero, and so I take it very personally when these things end up being really rough. And you know, the Justice League film is something I've been looking forward to for an extremely long time. The way people were looking forward to Endgame, that's what Justice League was for me. And they were basically completely opposite films. So, you know, I understand that perspective, and it bothers me. It bums me out that there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah, I get it. It bums me out too. I want it to be successful.
So yeah, that's where we are. But all right, so here's the deal. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will be talking WandaVision episode 8 previously on. So this is your spoiler warning for all of WandaVision at this point. Okay, this is your warning. We will be right back, everybody. All right, we're back. We are here to talk WandaVision episode 8 previously on. Spoiler warnings, like we said. Okay, so guys, we finally get some, we get some backstory. We get a lot of Agatha. So there's a lot of ground to cover here. A lot of questions still unanswered, of course. But where would you guys like to start?
Okay, so starting at the very beginning, this is the very first one that doesn't have Elizabeth Olsen saying previously on WandaVision. So we didn't even get her sad voice. And I think it's because this is the first one that's completely out of the sitcom world. There's not any part of sitcom in this episode. Also, it turns to purple instead of bright red. So we know that Agatha is controlling this episode. She does explain the runes on her bewitched basement. She flat out says bewitched, and that's fun because her house is the identical setup outside that the bewitched house was. So that's a really fun little Easter egg.
Nice.
But we start with her in 1692 or 93. And
1690s.
She is,
I think that's the first MCU thing like chronologically to happen so far, right, in the entire like MCU.
In Earth we have, yeah, things older
because of Thor. We get like a lot of flashbacks to stuff in Thor that's, I would imagine, I mean, took place long before that.
I'm gonna be super nitpicky here, but technically the Collector started with like the Big Bang.
That's true. That's, but I mean, true, we didn't, yeah, actually see that. It's just like,
well, we know, saw the
like hologram of it, right?
We did see like the celestial using the one of the stones and the big staff killing everybody, you know, the Power Stone and Guardians.
Fair enough. Maybe I should specify on Earth.
Yeah, you should have. I mean,
my bad.
I just had to mansplain the Marvel.
That's what I like to do, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I just got to do it first this time. All right, so
yes,
I basically, she is being murdered. She is on trial for trying to become more powerful, for embracing dark arts, and we find out that this is her coven, led by what I assume is her biological mother, at least the woman that raised her. And the way that when the two of them are facing off, the way that her crown forms with the power makes me think that she is Sharna, which is a side character in Marvel, of course. And she's pretty powerful. In this one, she's pretty dead. But she also had a tome called the just the Book of Sharna, which could be exactly what that book is in Agatha's house.
I still think it's either the Darkhold or the Necronomicon, but that's definitely a strong possibility too.
I mean, those two are incredibly popular, so that could be it, but there are over 20-30 different magic books in Marvel.
It's true. So. And I don't know most of them.
If it's the Necronomicon, then maybe Bruce Campbell is going to show up in Spider-Man 3 as Ash.
Well, they actually said he's showing up in Doctor Strange 2, or he tweeted something to
Doctor Strange 2. Yeah, I meant Doctor Strange.
Well, of course, Raimi is
contractually obligated to include Bruce in everything.
And his car.
And his car.
It's true. The olds.
I'd be cool with that. Bring Ash into the MCU. Let's do it.
He's already in the comic book, so why, right, not?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It'd be perfect. I'm totally on board with that. Well, that connects
to What If and the Marvel Zombies.
True. It's true. Yeah, that was a really cool scene. You know, when you think of what was happening in those years, you know, I expected it to be people putting her, no, like regular people putting her on trial, and it kind of twisted that it was her own coven putting her on trial. It was a little weird that she, like, you don't really get an explanation other than she, like, read some dark stuff as to, you know, how she's able to find the power to beat six other witches that are all above her in power. Mm-hmm. So that's a little weird, but it was cool to see. She was kind of absorbing their power, and it almost looked like she was absorbing their life force even, mm-hmm. because the husks that fell to the ground were definitely like, I don't know, it looks like what a vampire would leave his victim looking like with no blood in him or something like that.
Well, I assume that's what she was doing, because again, like, she hasn't aged. Right? So I assume that's what she does.
Although she does look older at the end with the kids, she does look like the way her makeup is done. They were clearly trying to make her look a little more intense, and I think she looked a little older as a result of that. But maybe that's, I don't know.
I thought that was just kind of because it wasn't a fake sitcom anymore.
Could be.
You know, but that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. Chat was wondering about an appearance of a character named, is it Thawne? C-T-H?
Thawne. Like
Thawne?
Cthulhu.
Oh, okay. Like Cthulhu. Gotcha. What do you think, Ray? I have no idea who that is.
So I'm not too familiar with that character either. I assume that word, chthonic, you know, goes with that. So.
I have heard some other theories that he's going to show up. I don't know. I'm still sticking with Mephisto.
Yeah. Okay.
So although it makes me start, this is the first episode where I started to question whether Mephisto is going to be in it or not. Because I think this late in the game to introduce another villain that's kind of like even more powerful than Agatha kind of lessens Agatha as a villain. You know, if she's just like a subordinate for somebody else, it kind of makes her, you know, if there was somebody manipulating and controlling her the whole time, that probably should have been revealed in episode 8, I would think. Right. But unless they're just going to leave it on a huge cliffhanger for Doctor Strange 2, which is entirely possible. I still think we'll see Mephisto, but I think it'll be like an after credits scene or mid credits scene in the next episode. We won't get much of him if we do.
That's fair. Well, we've got a poll running in chat right now in the live stream. Do you think Mephisto will show up in the WandaVision season finale? Ray, do you think he will? We know Ryan's thoughts.
It would be really cool if he did. I am hoping that it's not secretly Hayward.
Yeah, I really hate that theory.
Yeah.
I really don't want it to be Hayward. Really don't at this point.
Yeah, me either. So I want Mephisto just in the MCU for a couple different reasons. One, I feel like Thanos was set up for so long, and now they're going to give us multiple Thanos level villains at once, proving that, you know, the Avengers are ready for a higher kind of war. To me, it's more that it's not as believable to have these kind of beings exist in this world, and one guy is the biggest of the bads out there. So I'm looking forward to a phase 4, 5, and 6 with, you know, Doom and Kang and Mephisto, you know, like three huge potential villains that could just
universe level threats.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Just, it didn't make sense to me that there was just this one guy out there who everybody feared, like, whatever.
And really, he's like a little bitch compared to the, you know, Mephisto and some of these other ones.
For like,
you know,
10 movies, he just sat on his golden throne floating.
I still think
toilet.
It was a toilet. Yeah, yeah. I still think it was a toilet.
Oh, it totally was. So he didn't have to get up.
That's right. 100%. I mean, I would make a throne that was also a toilet if it was me.
For
my
sure.
God. My God.
You just 3D print it.
Exactly. I'm on it.
Moving on.
I hope it's not Hayward. The things that I want to see out of this, I want to see who Jimmy Woo's missing person is. And at this point, I don't care who it is. I just want
Ralph.
I honestly hope it's like Norm or some shit.
No, yeah, I think it's going to be Ralph, and Ralph is going to turn out to be Mephisto, but we'll see.
That would be cool. I like the idea of that, because there are multiple fun iterations of witches marrying the devil in pop culture. And, you know, one of my favorites was The Witches of Eastwick. The movie is so good.
So the whole premise of the episode is that Agatha wants to figure out how Wanda is doing what she's doing.
All that power drew Agatha to Westview, and she does not know how she created a spontaneous creation. She doesn't know how she's able to maintain a lot of this because she's never seen power like that before. She's only ever heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Heard of it, excuse me.
Right.
It came across kind of like a jealous sibling where, you know, she had to work her whole life to be able to get this level of power, whereas Wanda just kind of stumbled into it.
And this episode led me to believe that Agatha is going to be more of a gray character or an antagonist rather than a full-on evil villain, because while she is holding her kids hostage and doing, not an evil thing, she is also forcing Wanda to remember. She's forcing Wanda to confront her tragedies, which, you know, at times that wasn't the coolest way to go about it, but she is Wanda remembers by the end.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it gives us a good opportunity. Like, it's a nice narrative device to give the audience an opportunity to see some of these previous events, you know, get to see what her family was like. We get to see the tie-in to why she kind of escaped into classic, you know, 50s style sitcoms initially and things like that, because that's what she grew up on. She loved those things back home. And I thought that was really cool
that she stopped the bomb that launched or that landed in front of her and her brother. So it wasn't just a dud.
I love the idea that she had latent powers.
Right.
Before, and that
she was just able to manipulate without even knowing what she was doing.
And in the comics, her background was retcon. She is not a mutant. She is a long line of Scarlet Witches, which is basically Phoenix level character power. She's also a Nexus being, meaning she is a constant in all the universes. There are no other versions of Wanda. She is it in every universe. So she's legit the most powerful Avengers, what they've kind of set her up as.
Definitely of the current Avengers. Who knows what will happen in the future, but.
Well, before this, I would have said that her and Carol were tied, but now I just don't think so.
I mean, Doctor Strange is way up there too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, his abilities, especially by the time we see him in Infinity War, are pretty impressive. I'd be curious to see where he is by the time we see him next.
Yeah, and this whole thing does kind of raise the question of where is Doctor Strange? Because the witch, Agatha, said that she was drawn there by the immense amount of power. And we know that Doctor Strange pretty much always has a handle on anything magical of what's going on, because, you know, he was able to find Thor on the walking the streets with Loki and Ragnarok, and you know, he mentioned there was a line in there that where he's keeping track of the threats on Earth, and you know, that would be a pretty big threat, and it's not really that far from where his sanctum is,
right?
Geographically. So where is he while this is going? Maybe he'll show up in the last episode, but that seems like they should have called him.
That's a huge problem with all of these solo outings, is you'd think someone would notice if 1,000 people in New Jersey was taken hostage and not just a ridiculous government agency.
Well, and S.W.O.R.D. has access to the Avengers, right? I mean, they were able to get Vision's body. So obviously they have some level. It doesn't
seem like Hayward would ever call them.
No, especially not someone like Doctor Strange. Maybe he would have called Tony or Cap because they're still like basically human, you know, but Strange has such incredible abilities. I don't think Hayward would ever trust him. You know, so my assumption is Strange is off somewhere else, some other time, some other reality, some other place, doing something that is important.
But Strange and Wong are just like Agatha. They study to get their power to make themselves stronger, whereas with Wanda, it comes naturally, or even worse, it comes from emotion.
And it's possible that Strange is there. He just hasn't gone inside because he understands what it is and he doesn't want to get trapped inside because he doesn't necessarily understand the full nature of its control.
It's certainly possible. It's just a little weird. Like maybe he is dimension hopping, like mentioned in chat, or like you said, dealing with something somewhere else. But like surely somebody in his, like Wong or some of the other, you know, sorcerers out there would think that maybe this is worth their attention. Even if Hayward wouldn't call them, somebody would be able to detect that this is happening and go and do something. It's a little weird, but I mean, the show is great, so I'm nitpicking with that, but you know, it's a problem when you have these big shared universes.
Well, so let's talk about Hayward, because no matter what seems to happen in this show, I still hate him the most.
I've been saying this since the beginning that there's something going on with him. He's the villain. He's a villain at the very least, or maybe, you know, he's been an antagonist so far.
He is just such a piece of shit.
By the end, he is 100% villain. I'm so glad that the memories that we uncovered absolved her of stealing a body, because that did not make any goddamn sense to me. And he was the one that put it in her head that she could do it. And it didn't even cross her mind. She wanted to say goodbye. She didn't get a funeral for her brother. Shortly thereafter, she is confined to the Avengers compound, with Vision being her only friend. So it just feels like Wanda loses everyone that she's close to. And all she wanted to do was say goodbye. And then you have this dick.
I'm not totally convinced that this show is going to stop that trend of her losing everybody she cares about, honestly. You know, there's some theories with the White Vision that shows up at the mid-credits scene and how that could work. But I'm not totally convinced that that's going to be the solution to, you know, bringing Vision back, in that maybe it's kind of a red herring and he's going to still be gone and she's just going to be a tragic character, because we have reasonable suspicions that she's going to be the villain in Doctor Strange 2, at least for part of the movie. So it seems unlikely that if he came back and was just super happy and everybody, they could be together again, that she would go to be a villain in that movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting point. I mean, I think they have to set her up as like a real villain and not an antagonist. I don't know that they have an easy job of doing that, because right now she doesn't hate everybody. She hates certain people, right? And she wants to be left alone. But what's going to happen that will force her to do something so bad that she becomes a villain for Doctor Strange? That they still have to answer.
You mean like the point in House of M when she whispers "no more mutants" and changes the whole world?
But that's a different version of this character, right?
Sure, but they're using some elements from that story. And I mean, all of, you know, everybody has a breaking point. How much tragedy can this character take before she has that, you know what I mean, that snap, so to speak? You know, I don't think it'll take much. I think she's clearly on the precipice at this point.
So Hayward, like, yeah, he eggs her on. I'm not even sure that he knew what his plan was at that point in time, because the position that he puts her in, the shock that she's about to receive, that he's purposely setting up. What if she had gone off and just, like, you know, blown up the building and everybody in it?
I think he was just betting on that not happening.
Then he's an idiot. Like, I mean, yeah, he's a bad guy, but he's also kind of an idiot, because like, why would you push a character who you already know is incredibly powerful, but deeply emotionally distraught by doing that? It just seems like that's a dumb decision.
The thing I don't get is, like, when they were showing his body, they had like grinders and stuff on his body. Isn't he made of vibranium? Like, what is a grinder gonna do to vibranium? You know, they were clearly just trying to get a rise out of her. It's not gonna do anything.
I don't know, because they still find a way to disassemble him.
Well, I'm sure there's nuts and bolts, but like,
are there? There's the way he's built in Civil War doesn't show any of that stuff.
Or not, well, so it's Tony Stark, so he's using advanced, you know, assembly methods, I'm sure, but I'm pretty sure, and none of them involve using a grinder to cut an uncuttable material apart.
No, but I just think in Age of Ultron, but like, you know, we don't, there's no nuts and bolts. He's basically 3D printed, you know, out of vibranium and other synthetic materials. But I don't know, the way they handle vibranium in the MCU is inconsistent because it's indestructible, but you can form it.
Well, that's the same way adamantium is in the comic books. You can like melt adamantium once, and then once it forms, you can't do it again. If I remember right, please correct me, Ray, if I'm wrong on that. But I thought I remember reading
how
that.
It's treated. But no, anytime there is a weird substance and you have multiple writers using it, you know it. Things get messy.
Yeah. Chat had a good thought though, that maybe they're using stuff from the battle in New York. So, you know, that Chitauri technology or something like that. That would work.
Well, yeah, we know what Thanos was able to shatter Cap's shield in Endgame. So, mm-hmm. you know, it can be broken at a certain power level, but yeah, it's a little weird. You know, they show like the arm or whatever just like sliding apart with a weird kind of fleshy noise.
Yeah.
And then there's like a hexagon piece of like dermis in there. Well, I assume you would call it a dermis on something like that. It's like several layers of skin deep.
I don't know what you'd call it, but I think that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it identifies it. But yeah, I mean, that was a weird scene. It was definitely not cool. Like, it's very morbid. You know, this is a cyborg, of course, but you know, you're just seeing a lifeless head on there from somebody that you know have seen this whole show alive and like pretty caring and generally a nice guy, just laying there gray with a piece of it missing. I mean, that was pretty morbid for a Disney thing, honestly.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff in this where when you break it down, it's kind of sad. Like it's not kind of sad; it's just full on depressing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That brings us to, you know, a pretty emotional scene between Wanda and Vision that takes place, I guess, prior to Civil War, sometime shortly after Age of Ultron, because she's, you know, still very much mourning her brother. Not that she ever really stops mourning her brother, but this seemed pretty fresh. That, you know, I want to make sure I get the quote right, but what is grief but love?
Persevering.
It's a really good quote and a really great definition of grief, at least for me. I felt like that was a really great way to articulate the feeling. And for that to come from Vision of all people, I love the Vision character. I love Paul's version of Vision. I think it's just a really cool character. And this just made me love him even more.
So I don't know how many brownie points I'm going to get with my husband here, but when I heard that line come from the synthezoid, I immediately thought of the line in Wrath of Khan that Shatner delivers, where he's like, out of every soul I've met, his was the most human. So it made me think that the people that these characters created in pulp culture that are supposed to be emotionless or robotic or, you know, learning human traits just ends up being the most human out of all of us.
That's because this is really the only way you can give a character arc to a robot. I mean, but yes, true. I agree. He does at times in this seem to be more human than most of the Avengers, you know, based on what we've seen of them. So yeah, it definitely is pertinent. I mean, he's very human and very in touch despite being a synthezoid or, you know, whatever you want, whatever he's called in this.
I do feel I have to point out that the line struck a beautiful chord with a good majority of fans. A lot of people really liked that line and it has stood out, been represented in fan art. And now, because of how much people have connected with the line, there are assholes saying, you know, well, it's a stupid line. And of course, everybody loves it. It's, you know, what are you trying to prove by saying it's a good line? And like, people are just jerks. So go be a jerk somewhere else. That's all I'm going to say. Just let people have this beautiful line. To me, it's arguably one of the best things a Marvel writer has written. Yeah, out of MCU stuff, it's one of the best written lines.
It's a very pretty, well thought out line. I think it's very meaningful and works really well. And it, you know, the Vision character in the MCU has kind of been, it's very similar to the non-human character on the main cast of various Star Trek shows. You know, your Spock, your Data, your EMH doctor, because they're more of the audience lens into the world. In a way, because they're analyzing that world constantly. They're outsiders to the world like we are. And sometimes that's the best way for the audience to make a connection to that fictional world. And I think that the WandaVision show has really given Vision a way to cement that legacy for that character in the MCU. I am at this point pretty convinced that we're not going to see him again after this season. I think he's probably done, as sad as that will make me, but yeah, I think that's the reality.
That's okay. This is, I feel, a really good jumping off point. I think it's a nice end to his legacy. He's been playing the character for 12 years now.
I think as far as character arcs go, you know, you can't really beat, he didn't get his own movie, but still, I mean, it's this show is more content than a movie would have been anyway, even if he had to share it with Wanda. So yeah, if this is the end, I'm not 100% convinced this is the end for him. That is certainly an option, but if it is, I think that's fine. And, you know, he's a good character and was a good character and had a good arc and, you know, really resonated through this show. So yeah, I mean, if that's it, that's it. And I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
So by the end of their little journey through the past, Agatha discovers that Wanda uses chaos magic as her power.
Yeah,
she calls
it chaos magic. Yeah.
Right.
Which has been something Wanda has used multiple times. But the source of her magic and what it's called has changed so many times. You know, in just a few issues later, Doctor Strange is like, there's no such thing as chaos magic, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, at that point, I think dropping the Scarlet Witch line, dropping the probability hex, and dropping the chaos magic lines are all fun fan service and could mean literally nothing.
I actually liked how they brought the Scarlet Witch name into the MCU because that's kind of a weird name, like in a realistic setting. So the fact that it's like a trait that's passed down through families or something like that, a title that's passed down through that's a cool, that it's a title and not like a superhero name, I think is a pretty cool way of handling that. So I'm pretty happy with that.
I am too. I really hated how Whedon tried to do it in Age of Ultron, or no, not Age of Ultron. It was Civil War, and it was the Russos, where after the explosion in Lagos, they had those news tickers say the witch, whatever. And I thought that was silly.
We also get the vision that she has, you know, when she comes in contact with the stone, and then you kind of see, you know, you kind of see her as the Scarlet Witch, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of unclear as to whether that's like another multiverse version of her, like reaching out, or like if that's her future or what it is. But yeah, it was definitely a cool to see her with the headpiece and, you know, in the full outfit and everything. I'm sure we'll get to see that in this last episode. I'm really hoping so, because the pieces of costume that we've gotten to see so far look really great. And it would be a huge waste if we didn't actually get to see it, you know?
Director of this episode, I think, did a great job for their backstory, just the young Pietro and Wanda. And I thought this was a really strong way to show their backstory. It's kind of a shame they didn't do that as the opening scene to Age of Ultron. It would have been incredibly powerful and got you on the twin side pretty fast instead of warming up to them the way the Avengers did. But saving it for now and uncovering all of this is poetic tragedy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the way they were handled earlier on because it gives them a reason to not quite trust everybody and vice versa, which leads into this show really well. I think if we already had this backstory, then it would be even harder to be on the side of Sword at the beginning of the show. Now, of course, with Hayward, you know, like if you're still on the side of Sword, I mean, then you're a bad guy. I don't know what to tell you, but early on, though, you know, an argument can be made. This woman took, you know, complete captive of a town. You know, she probably needs to be stopped. That sounds like a reasonable sentence, right? I like the flashbacks. I liked kind of getting to see these moments and filling out those characters was really cool. And we do have, of course, the mid-credit scene. Do you have anything you want to talk about before we get to that?
No, I think we covered most of the stuff. I mean, the scene where she goes to the house and has the like floor plan or whatever that was with the heart and the V on it. It was interesting. It said the Vision on the sheet, which is cool that they're kind of going with the comic book, you know, nomenclature there. But I mean, that shows that, like, kind of shows that the heart on the calendar, the relation there from the first episode. That was emotional, right? Like,
yeah,
it was a tough scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, Elizabeth Olsen has done a really great job, and you know, if they're not nominated for something, her and Paul Bettany, then that'll be really disappointing.
I mean, I really think all three of them should be nominated because Catherine's been just an amazing supporting character as well. I think all three of them, I think, deserve nods for this. This has been, you know, just a really unique experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
For sure. So the mid-credit scene.
Yes.
More proof Hayward's a jerk.
So we get another Vision, kind of, sort of.
We get the white Vision that has been, I guess, kind of teased and set up. But this is straight out of the comics. After he was dismantled, he was put back together to use as a weapon. His memories had been wiped, and he was basically, Ultron Light.
Did his color change?
It was just a comic thing to symbolize that he wasn't the same anymore.
It was West Coast Avengers, right? That's the one that he showed up in.
Yeah. But why on the show did his color change? Because like they have all the material, right? Like, did they paint him? I mean, was that a step? Like, sorry, we're not ready yet. Hey, we got to finish the second coat. Like, is that what the conversation was?
He turned gray when he got killed. So, who knows? Having a different power source maybe changed the color. I mean, I doubt it was paint, but
I'm being facetious, but.
Yeah. But you do see like a little arc reactor, like Tony's, like not square, but almost trapezoidal looking arc reactor, but a tiny version in his forehead. Which, if they were going to bring Vision back without the Mind Stone, then I guess that's how you do it. We don't know that that's going to happen. You know, you have the idea that this Vision is kind of like the soulless weapon corpse. Vision, and that the soul of Vision is actually the one in the bubble. It can't leave, so they just combine the two, and now you have Vision back. That's a theory that's out there.
Yeah,
I don't know if that'll be what happens. I kind of hope that happens because I like Vision. I don't want him to go away, but his arc is over at this point.
That's where I'm kind of stuck, is like on the personal level, that's what I want to see happen, right? I want to see them kind of fight each other and then Vision realize that he can essentially like reach inside and take over, you know, but that's because I love the character. And I think realistically, you're right. His arc is over. His story has been told. And, you know, this is kind of the end of that. As sad as that might make me, that doesn't mean it's a bad story.
Right.
You know, sad doesn't mean bad.
Now, the MCU has a different opportunity than the comics do. In the comics, you know, it's really difficult to kill off a character permanently because the whole point is you want to continue stories so new fans will love them just as much as we do. But in the films, these actors' lives are finite and they want to move on and do other things too. So when their time comes, it's different for everybody. So if Paul Bettany is continuing, they are doing a fantastic job of not telling us if he's in Doctor Strange or not, or, you know, the next Avengers team up. So I totally respect the storytelling coming here, and I'm not going to be upset if this is it, because this journey of his has been really beautiful and well-rounded.
And to your point about Doctor Strange 2 and everything, I think it's a lot harder to make Wanda a villain if Vision is alive.
Well, I don't think they are doing a full villain thing with her.
That's fair.
But it really does feel like she's just destined to be the sad person. And so she might just end up having to die eventually. Because if they keep removing people and parts of her life that she loves, like, what else is there? It's just, at some point, a person is just too sad to go on like that. And that's a very depressing thing to say, but they do keep shitting on Wanda.
Yep.
So the prevailing theory that I like, or maybe it's not the prevailing theory, but the theory I like about the White Vision is that it's actually Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they've had James Spader on the IMDb for a long time, and a lot of people just brushed it off, and including me. You know, I thought it was just people just assuming. But I mean, maybe he actually is like Ultron in this Vision body, and that's their way of bringing Vision into, or bringing Ultron back into the MCU. And you know, if they had Vision or had Ultron in Vision's body, that's a really something that would definitely set Scarlet Witch off, right? Like, you definitely want to be a villain at that point. And you know, Sword could paint her as a villain because she's fighting somebody that's trying to help. You know, Sword is presenting as somebody trying to help. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that would work out really well with that. And it would continue Paul Bettany in the MCU, which is great. So Paul Bettany and James Spader, you know, kind of as a commingling.
Yeah, it's a little weird, kind of like, you know, Silver Surfer or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah,
I definitely heard that. I think it's a good way to bring back that villain who, you know, they could clearly do a lot of interesting things with, and I think could be a lot more interesting of a villain with Iron Man out of the picture, because, you know, there's a little too much overlap in their abilities to keep it interesting for long.
Well, and Ultron has daddy issues, so if Tony Stark isn't there, then...
That's a good point. Yeah,
they can go fair. Another round. So do you think Paul Bettany's all these times he's in interviews and stuff, he's talked about this cameo, do you think it's actually himself and he's just been trolling everybody?
Man, I read that, right? Because so for people who don't know, the quote is that he got to act against somebody he's never had an opportunity to act against before.
And he's always wanted to.
And so now the not so joke is that he meant himself. And that means, you know, Visions and Vision are going to go up against each other, which I think is pretty inevitable at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's hilarious. The only reason I don't necessarily believe that is because I think Marvel would not have been happy with it, because it set up a bunch of expectations that will not meet. Right. And so I'm a little worried that if it is that, it's a joke that went too far and people are going to be really pissed.
Maybe. I mean, there's no way he could have known that it would blow up like that, you know? But if anything, it's brought more eyes on the show. So I doubt Marvel will be that upset about
Really. That's fair. I mean, it depends how angry people are when, you know, Ian McKellen doesn't show up at the end of the show, because that was a theory for a while.
I have a feeling that this is one of those things where fans have theorized how it's going to end so much that there will be a faction of people, no matter what, who will just be beyond disappointed.
Yeah.
Essentially true.
And I mean, somebody probably got the answer right at this point. Yeah. There's only so many possibilities.
I don't know. If it's Mephisto, then it could be anybody. You know what I mean? Any actor. You know, we've heard the leak, the supposed leak, but it really, it could be anybody. So, if it's Mephisto, there's a lot of doors wide open, and maybe nobody guessed it because there's a lot of actors that could play that role. So,
All right. Well, I think that's a good spot to stop. Next week, we'll be back to discuss the season finale of WandaVision. I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about how they either do or do not wrap things up. I'm sure that there'll be a lot there. Well, maybe there'll be a stinger for Falcon at the end of it or something. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
They did release
Doctor Strange too, I think.
They did release the runtime. It'll be 50 minutes long.
Ooh.
So the longest episode.
Yeah.
Because I think this one was what, like 40, 43 or 47? Something like that. It was definitely one of the longer episodes.
So there you have it. So that's what we're doing. Don't forget, the week of March 22nd, we're doing two episodes that week. On Monday, the 22nd, we will be reviewing Zack Snyder's Justice League, the Snyder Cut, all 4 hours and 2 minutes of it. We'll be discussing live on that Monday. And then the following day, on our normal time, we will be reviewing the season premiere and series premiere of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So be sure to block out your calendars for that so you can join us live and chat during the show. I do want to thank everybody who did chat with us during the show. We had some good conversations and questions and suggestions. So thank you very much to everybody who joined us. I really appreciate it. Again, we're live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Screen Heroes Podcast Facebook page. Don't forget to join our Screen Heroes Podcast Forum group on Facebook. We talk news, memes, we do tournaments and polls and lots of cool stuff. So you can come join all the fun conversation there as well. Follow the show at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter and Instagram, or DericoStudios.com, where you can stream it. We're on all of your podcast apps. You name it, you got it. If you can't find it, you let me know. I am at the Star Trek Dude. Ryan, where can people find you?
At Buster Props.
And Ray, where can people find you?
At Siren Ray.
And that is us. We are Screen Heroes. Thank you for joining us. We will catch you next time.